Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host of Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light, and co-hosting the show as well as Sandy Freeze, professional life coach therapist. And we have with us today, once again, is Shane Crum.
To accept this call, press 0. To refuse this call, is from a correction facility.
Our special guest, Shane Crum, is a wrongfully convicted individual serving 2 life sentences for a crime he did not commit. In addition, we are going to have on with us Shane's mother, Sally Crum, Bob Chattel, and longtime supporter of Shane and Louis Piccone, Shane's legal advisor, and Shane's cousin, Dana Mayo. In the United States, which is the only country in the world with mass incarceration, there are individuals convicted of serious and inflammatory crimes based upon a single witness and without any substantiated documentation and or physical evidence. So many people today make up mass incarcerations in the United States. There is a battle, an apparent battle over custody issues, or there was, which resulted in this gentleman's time in prison serving 2 life sentences. So we're going to let Shane talk to everyone about his story, and we are going to also welcome on with us Bob Chattel. So Shane, do you want to speak to the audience briefly about your story and move on to whatever it is you wanted to also bring out in this episode?
I wanted to point out that Chris and I had dated for a number of years, and then when Kayla was born, it put a rift in our relationship. We eventually moved back.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
We moved back to Ohio, and then she briefly stayed with her parents, and I stayed with my mother. When Christine and I finally broke up in July of 1995, Christine and Taylor shortly moved in with Johnny Compton, which was like in October, so that's like 3 months. 2 months later, Johnny and my daughter Taylor were playing ball or something in the living room, and Taylor tried to kiss Johnny with apparently an open mouth. Johnny, I guess, panicked and ran into the bathroom and told Christine about the kiss, to which Christine apparently replied, so what? At the time, Christine was working third shift and she was getting ready to go to work. So then Johnny had waited until Christine left for work and then began interrogating Kayla. I call this an interrogation because, according to what he said, by the time he was done questioning her, he said that she was so upset that he had to put her to bed. So, and from the stuff I've been reading, that leads to suggestibility. And when I contacted Bob Chattel, he was able to tell me more about, suggestibility, and he knows some of the people apparently that ran the study that I had been reading prior to that.
Okay, Shane, could we stop? Shane, could we stop for a minute? Bob, can you talk a little bit about that, what Shane just mentioned?
What about suggestibility?
Okay, what was it about the suggestive, is that what it's called, suggestive?
Suggestibility.
Yes.
I mean, research has established very well that young children are very suggestible. I mean, it varies from child to child. Some children actually do resist suggestions, but others respond very, very quickly to it. And because children, small children especially, are so suggestible, it's very easy for an interrogator to construct a narrative and have the child agree to the narrative. And if this is done over and over again, the child not only agrees to the narrative, but actually comes to believe it. I mean, the child's memories will actually become contaminated. And it is, in Shane's case, there's no evidence that Shane's daughter was ever properly interrogated. I mean, the stepfather certainly didn't know how to interrogate children. The mother certainly didn't know how. And at that time, most professionals did not know how to interrogate children because the research hadn't been done. But
I'm glad you're mentioning this, because this has, what you're saying is exactly true. I've heard so many times about it, and Sandy probably has heard about it too, being a therapist. But suggestive, and another thing is when an outsider is questioning a child whom is living in the same home as they are, and it is a male that's questioning the child without the presence of the mother or anyone else, that kind of raised red flags. And I don't know if Shane or you found out whether or not that child, the one that questioned the child, the professional, the licensed social worker, if she questioned the boyfriend as well. Because to me, when a boyfriend will question a child rather than just call the mother or call the police or call the social services and leave it up to them to question the child, but for the child to just coincidentally do this in front of the boyfriend without the mother being present, and all of a sudden this becomes a blown out issue, that's something I question myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a long, long time before Shane's daughter even saw a professional, and I can't remember who the first professional was. But it was a good month or more later that she was ever questioned by a professional. And the professional that testified at trial did not interrogate the daughter until April. And the first these accusations go back to late December. And there had been so much contamination at that point that it would not have been possible to interrogate the daughter properly. So what it comes out to, none of her testimony at trial was reliable because of contamination, because of memory contamination. And there was really no other evidence against Shane. So basically, Shane was convicted on unreliable evidence. He did not get a fair trial. His constitutional rights were violated.
Yes, and you know, it's so much easier to plant an idea into a child's head than it is to remove it once it's there.
Right, right.
It's confusing, too. We have a couple more callers. You want to state your name, please?
Loop,
are you talking to me?
Oh. Okay, so Sally Crum, Shane's mother, and Lou Piccone, Shane's legal advisor, are both on with us as well.
Yes.
And Shane we were just talking about the questioning of the child without the presence of the mother by the boyfriend and not having anyone know anything about what's going on until after the fact.
Ohio Correctional Facility and may be recorded and monitored.
I want to say real quickly to the audience, too, these recordings that they have on calls takes up most of the monies that people are spending to talk with their loved ones. So if anyone ever gets an opportunity, call the media and bring these issues out. Prisoners don't have to have these recordings every 2 seconds, every 2 minutes during their calls. They only have 15-minute calls, and it's usually wasted by 5 minutes of recordings. But anyway, go ahead, Shane, speak up some more. We're interested in what you have to say.
Well, one of the things I think a lot of people need to realize is we have in this situation a 4-year-old child who's being interrogated by a man that she just pretty much moved in with within 2 months, and he's badgering her because he clearly said that when he questioned her, he said that he said something about, well, would you learn to kiss like that? And her first response was, well, on TV. Well, he chose to ignore that response. He just dismissed it, and he kept asking her. Her second response was, well, I don't know. And then, according to his testimony, I believe he said her third response was, well, maybe daddy or something along the line. The problem with that is he stated that she was crying at this point. She was crying. So this is something that Kayla doesn't know. This is something that Kayla was left with without any other adult that Kayla was familiar with, and he is the one questioning her. And it didn't stop there. We have there are circumstances throughout my entire case where you see multiple interviews, the psychologist dealing with anatomically correct dolls, and the research shows that those dolls are suggestive in themselves. So, and then the research also shows that people can suffer from what's known as a false memory. So basically, they implanted these memories in the kid's mind, and now she firmly believes them to this day. So starting from that point to this point, you know, it's kind of hard for something in my position to, keep saying, look, I didn't do this. I'm telling you I didn't do this. There's no evidence that I did this. The only thing that I was convicted of was the testimony of Kayla and the people who wanted me out of the way to begin with.
It says the only ones that suffer is the father and the daughter. And I'm sure the daughter by now is so confused that she just believes anything. We have another caller. Do you want to state your name, please? Okay, we have Mr. Piccone. Would you mind saying a few things regarding Shane's case?
Yeah, sure. I'd like to just continue on with the thoughts that Shane has been expressing. To me, once I think his name is Johnny Confalone, started to question the daughter, there was an issue regarding what influence he had on the daughter. And to me, once he believed that the daughter had been molested in any way, the first question that came to my mind was, why didn't he go to the police right away? He didn't. What happened was he first had doubts raised in his mind whether the daughter was molested. Then he went to the grandmother, and then he went to the mother, Christine McNutt. And then after some discussion that appears to have been the boyfriend, Confalone, influencing the mother and the grandmother that molestation happened, they went to an attorney and they asked the attorney what they should do. And the attorney did not tell them to go to the police. The attorney told them to go to social services. And then social services came in and conducted an interview with the daughter. And then the police first came involved. And at that point, when the police first came involved, the daughter had an interview with a detective, and the police had all the evidence that Shane would ultimately be convicted on. And the rape of a child is a very, very serious crime. It's one of the most serious crimes out there. When you talk about the seriousness of crimes, you get murder and rape of a child. They're probably the two most serious crimes. So once the police are informed that you know, there's an allegation that there's been a rape of a child. They don't do anything for months afterwards. So the question that was raised in my mind regarding this issue is, why don't the police, why don't social services do anything for months after they first interview the daughter? And it's a big issue in my
no
mind
evidence.
Because...
No evidence. Yeah. No evidence.
Because, yeah, you know, every police officer out there, every prosecutor out there, every social worker out there is going to know how the system works. They're going to know about the issue of child suggestibility. They're going to know that if you interview a child successively over time, the child is going to say, why are they asking me the same questions over and over again? Am I giving the wrong answers? And there is a positive pressure on especially young children like this poor girl to change their answers because they're getting all of the indications from the adults around them that the answers that they're giving are not the right ones. So going back to what Shane said. Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, you know, with all the coerced confessions adult prisoners have given, if the adult prisoners are afraid to speak the truth and hold to the truth, a child is most definitely going to follow that.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and it's natural that, you can predict what is going to happen in these type of circumstances. Any parents of any child who is accused of being molested or raped or abused in the way that they alleged against Sean is going to say, did this happen? You know, they're going to talk to the child. Are you sure you're telling us the truth? Tell us what happened. You know, we want to know. We're here to help you. The Department of Social Services, the police, the parents, they're all buzzing around this four-year-old child. And, the child is saying, what's going on? You know? And then as soon as the child says, I learned it from a movie, wrong answer. Mm. As soon as the child says, well, I don't know, wrong answer. As soon as she says, maybe daddy showed me, right answer.
Exactly.
It's massive attention, massive sympathy. honey, we love you. You know, and the child learns. I get it. If I say this answer, it's the right one. And when you look at everything that happened in this case, the long delay from an accusation of a rape against a 3 to 4 year old child, you know, what law enforcement officer that any of you know is going to say, hey, listen, I'm not going to get involved. The most common response is, I want to beat this person up. I want to get this guy. You know, what this person did was wrong, and it's true. None of that happens. Why not?
And you know, right, and then another thing is, too, whether she said, whether they, you know, clearly she was trained to say what she said.
Hold on a second, Shane. Hold on. Shane wants to say something. I'm sorry.
Ringing in my head that actually really disturbs me is the idea that the reason Caleb said, well, maybe daddy, was because she was wondering, well, is that to protect her from this bombardment of questions and this, because I'm sure that she was not, you know, generally probing her. I'm sure she wouldn't have been crying otherwise. And I find it disturbing to think that Caleb mentioned me because of the way he was badgering her. And know, and I wasn't there to protect her, and, you know, and I'm sure that's still somewhere in the back of her mind, and I can't get that out of my head for some reason.
Yeah.
I want people to think about that, you know, what it was that she was possibly doing. So,
you know, that does make sense, too.
Yes, it does. And I, you know, we know there, we know there's guilty and there's innocent. And, you know, of course, I completely believe, Shane, that you are innocent. But you know, even besides that, what about reasonable doubt? What about reasonable doubt? Because
yeah.
That alone would have cleared you.
That was out the window.
Well, you know, another thought that was really disturbing to me as I went through all these files was that there is no forensic evidence, there's no scientific evidence whatsoever of guilt. The sole and exclusive evidence of guilt was the testimony of Kayla after she had been, you know, poked and prodded by social services, the police, the people at the hospital, you know, all the psychologists, all, you know, giving her the signals that, you know, she had been hurt. And when you have a case where there's absolutely no forensic evidence at all, no ripped clothes, no DNA evidence, nothing, you know, no scarring, no stretching, no tears, nothing. You say, okay, you know, it's possible. You know, if the child has truly been hurt, you know, all of the facts will be consistent with that because it happened. But when all
Absolutely.
The facts are not consistent with it, it does raise reasonable doubt. And if it's explained to a reasonable jury, it should result in an acquittal. And, you know, here there was a lot of testimony from Kayla that was inconsistent with her testimony about her father's guilt. You know, she said the prosecution brought a charge against Shane that he had digitally penetrated his daughter. The daughter denied that on the stand. She denied it. The victim denied it. The prosecutor put a nurse who had examined the daughter on the stand, and the nurse said that the daughter had said that she was digitally penetrated. So you get the sense that the daughter had might have previously said that she was digitally penetrated, but then she changed her testimony and said when she was actually in the courtroom that, no, it didn't happen. So when you get an inconsistent testimony like that, and the testimony is the only thing that the conviction is based on, does that inconsistency raise questions about the rest of the testimony as well, especially in view of all the other circumstances here? And again, in my mind, it raises persistent doubts about Shane's guilt that constitutes reasonable doubt.
I have three
Absolutely.
Questions. I have three questions. One is the jury, was the jury instructed by the judge to give a lesser sentence, like a second degree, what do you call it, in the sentencing, to give the jurors alternatives to what they can actually come up with a sentence if they're going to. Also, was it around a political, you know, candidacy? I mean, what do you call it when, I can't even, the election. Was it around an election time for some politicians, like prosecution, you know, and some of them? I wonder about that. And as far as the child goes, I still can't understand if anyone ever talked to the boyfriend about or checked into the boyfriend's background.
Well, to my knowledge, nobody's ever checked into Johnny's background, to my knowledge. I was arrested on November 4th, which was election day,
Okay.
What was your first question?
The reason I sit around election time is because I know of other prisoners who were sent to prison with not all the facts, and it was right around election time, and a lot of people got promotions that year in that November, and that was 28 years ago. But these are some of the things that have to be taken into consideration as well. Was there some type of election coming up, and were they quick to sentence or quick to bring charges so that they would be able to get a promotion or you know, become a whatever it might have been? And
I think it's an important point, Leona, because if prosecutors or police are getting something in return for the conviction, it's a problem. It's a problem with the whole system.
And it's happened in many cases, and that's why I was wondering about that.
Well, here's a related issue as well. When you look at the nurse who examined Kayla at the hospital, she was a nurse who was trained in the physical examination of a child. She wasn't a psychologist. She wasn't a psychiatrist. By all appearances, had minimal training in any type of interviewing of children. She was competent only to examine the child and comment and say things like, well, the child was bruised or scarred or, had abrasions. She's competent to study, examine, and document physical injury. Her report shows that there was no physical injury at all. There was no physical indication whatsoever of molestation or rape. And then the nurse went beyond that physical examination and said that despite the lack of any physical evidence at all, she believed it was her opinion, which was presented to the jury, that Kayla had been raped. And her opinion was based... And Shane's attorney objected to the admission of that nurse's testimony as expert testimony, and the attorney was absolutely right. The nurse's testimony should have been exclusively on the lack of any physical or scientific evidence that Kayla had been raped. That's it. That's all she was competent for. That's all she had training for. And if you read through the nurse's testimony, she said she'd done something like 1,300 of these examinations, and in the vast majority of them, the child had been raped or molested. And
so
to me, going back to Leona's issue of what the people get out, you know, who is the nurse? Was the nurse ever molested? Was the nurse biased in favor of finding rape or molestation? Is her position at the hospital dependent upon, there being a steady inflow of, people who have been raped or molested? And one of the things that I've seen in other cases is when you look at the people behind the scenes who are doing all this stuff, they have been or they believe that they've been abused in one way or another, or their children have been. In one case I had, the forensic interviewer had a child who had been raped. And she was somebody who, you have to have sympathy for anybody who has to go through that type of circumstance. You know, nobody should be subjected to sexual abuse by another person. But if they are, and if that experience taints their view so that they see it in every case, even when it's not there, or when there's absolutely no evidence to show that to corroborate that it happened, that's an issue that should be presented to the jury, so that the jury can make its own decision as to what's going on.
Okay, Shane's going to have to call. He's going to be calling back. But what you're saying, Lou, makes so much sense. It really does. And once that nurse, as you say, once they determined whether the child was abused or not, that they should be out of the picture. And it should then go to the therapist, the psychologist or psychiatrist, to further discuss the child situation.
Well, there's a famous book called Jeopardy in the Courtroom by Brooke and Cece. They are forensic psychologists who study children's testimony. And the book goes through how children's testimony is suggestible. And one of the big issues here is as soon as there's an allegation of rape or sexual abuse of any kind, what is supposed to happen is the child is supposed to be interviewed on video before they're put into the type of environment where it's suggested to them that they were abused. And during that interview, enough detail is supposed to be taken such that, you know, the whole story comes out. When, how many times, as much as possible, so that the child only has to go through the interview experience once, and all of the evidence is taken during that one interview by somebody who knows what they're doing. So that
do you
get
mind
it all at once.
The name of that?
It's called Jeopardy in the Courtroom.
Thank you.
By Brooke and Cece. B-R-U-K and C-E-C-I. They are the authorities in this area, worldwide as far as I know.
Thank you.
And that the issue of these forensic interviews has been known since the 80s. It's been known throughout time. Every parent knows that children are suggestible. It's the way children learn. You know, there are Supreme Court cases that go back 100 years that talk about the suggestibility of children. So it's a well-known issue. But the reason why it's so important in today's American society is that in the 80s there were a bunch of very well-known, high-profile cases where people were convicted of the sexual abuse of minors. In a very public way. For example, the McMartin case out in California. The McMartins owned a daycare center, and you know, there was an allegation that they had been engaged in devil worshiping, I think, and they had abused all kinds of kids, and the police and prosecutors convicted them on of abusing tens, I believe, of children. And when you listen to the kids said that, you know, they saw people being beheaded and, you know, blood and all of these things that upon investigation by the police, there was absolutely no evidence of. And any reasonable parent hearing the totality of the allegations that were made would say, this sounds like, you know, fantasy. You know, and the McMartins were convicted, spent, you know, a long period of time incarcerated. And then when the videos of the interviews of the children came up, it was clear that the police just hammered the kids by saying, you know, didn't you see people, you know, making all kinds of suggestions as to what the police wanted to believe happened. And all of the convictions in all these cases were later overturned. But as a result of that, a lot of these interviews, people who are involved in these interviews said, we don't want to videotape these things anymore because if we videotape them, those videotapes can be used against us to show that the children were suggested what to say. And it led to, you know, a problem because so many of these interviews are not recorded. Or were not recorded, but after Cece and Brooke's book came out, many states adopted the technique of getting a group of people, somebody from the state police, a psychologist, a social worker, a group of people who would watch that first interview while the interviewer had an earpiece in so that they could ask any questions that they were fed by the other people participating from behind a two-way mirror. And that way you get everything at one interview, and the whole thing is done. The child doesn't have to go through multiple interviews. And this is an established procedure that the experts have talked about, discussed, peer-reviewed, and decided in conjunction with the courts is the best way to do this. And for all intents and purposes, is the only way it's supposed to be done because the other ways can be so problematic. And this is not the way it was done in Shane's case. So there was no videotape interview of Kayla, but there should be. And if that videotape or multiple videotapes turn up, because Kayla was apparently interviewed by many different people many times, then it's necessary to evaluate those tapes and say, look, you know, was she suggested to or not? But those tapes should have come out. They should have been made. They were supposed to be made. And there's no indication as to whether they were or not and what happened to them if they were. And that's another problem, because why wasn't that procedure used? It was known at the time. It was considered essential to do it the right way at the time. But it wasn't done in Shane's case. And you take that fact, because everybody in law enforcement, everybody in social services who deals with children who may have been subjected to sexual abuse knows this issue. You take that with the fact that they delayed months before they decided to prosecute Shane. And, you know, you start to get the sense that, you know what, something went wrong here. The people in the know did not think this was a prosecutable case at the beginning. And then they did. Because from day one, they had all of the evidence from Kayla that they would ever have. And they let months and months and months go by before electing to prosecute for a crime that cries out for justice if it occurred.
Yes, and so Kayla not only was taught to go against her father, then she lost her father. So she won in no way here. Shane definitely won in no way here. And I can't help but see how things, because when I was 12 years old and I was sexually molested, I actually went for help and was told, your father's a prominent man, go home and shut your mouth. So that's what I mean. That, you know, this is in the early, this is like 73 or 73, 75. So see, I just wasn't allowed to say anything. But even before that, I knew to keep my mouth shut. No one had to say, don't you say anything, because I already knew that. I knew, don't say anything. So it is so confusing to me that Kayla would just very openly make these accusations. I would think she would have struggled with that.
Yeah, if it was true,
You know, I think it's horrendous that there are so many women who have been subjected to this type of, criminal behavior, and people get away with it. And I think there's a lot of women who, because that's happened to them, they are suspicious in a way that people like me, because in my life, I never really experienced anything like this. And so I view it from a skeptical standpoint in a certain regard. And I had a girlfriend before I got married who told me that she had been abused by one of her father's friends. And, you know, she was crying when she told me. And it was the first experience that I'd ever had with it. And, you know, you read the statistics and you say, how could this be the case? You know, that there's so much of this. And it's necessary to bring it out in the open and to stamp it out, in my opinion. It really is.
You're right.
But
and you know it,
it's necessary.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lou. I'm sorry.
But it's necessary to do it with fair procedures so that, you know, a case like Shane doesn't happen. You know, the bottom line in so many of these unlawful false convictions is that the procedures that are supposed to be constitutionally guaranteed, that are reasonable, that are not expensive, that are less expensive than other procedures that are used often, are not used. And,
yeah.
And you know, you say, why not?
Absolutely. And then when she said, no, he didn't do that in court, once again, the poor child wasn't listened to. You know, it's what about Kayla's rights? I know this is about Shane's innocence, and yes, it is, but this points to that too. They did not listen to this child when she said, Dad didn't do that. They listened to a nurse who had zero evidence. I'm astounded.
Shane only has limited time. We have a time when he has to leave, and he's been trying to say something. So Shane, you want to say what was on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things here. Like, for example, you know, Kayla is definitely a victim in all this, but she's definitely not the only one. You know what I mean? And I've said this before. I struggle with the concept of presenting Kayla with the truth when she believes something else happened, because that could have a detrimental effect on Kayla. At the same time, you know, how else do I prove my innocence? So, and me sitting here, it affects my mother and my sister, you know, it affects, you know, a whole group of people. So it's just not me that, you know, I don't just, I feel sorry for Kayla. I feel that I didn't protect her, and because I didn't protect her from this, you know, now I'm dealing with this.
And, you know, years have gone by, which makes it even more difficult. But what I was going to say is Sandy's a warrior, because she has been through it. And my only child, as he was also a victim, and it doesn't just happen with girls, it happens with boys too. But in all of these experiences that all of us have had, and all of us research and all of us are involved in, we can actually say we know when, we pretty much know when someone is actually telling the truth or not, in case and those who are not. And in the case with your daughter, as you say, there was no evidence, you know, and there was really not much given to you to allow you to be able to, you know, voice your whole opinion and everything that happened. So these are situations that may have happened, different situations, but giving more experience to those on the outside that are able to actually see what's going on the inside.
And nothing too, because I've been sitting here for, you know, 20 plus years, and it took me that long to, you know, start finding people that were actually willing to help, like Bob and Lou, and you know, and if it wasn't for organizations like Bob's, you know, the National Center for Reason and Justice, who helped me and then put me in contact with Lou, I would actually be still sitting here trying to figure out a way out. But with, you know, with Lou's help, I'm actually starting to see a way forward and maybe some light at the end of the tunnel. I don't know. We haven't got there yet. We're looking at some of the stuff that is still missing, because we didn't get the entire case file. And that's something else that, you know, a lot of people need to understand. It's not just about, you know, the evidence or the lack thereof or the comments, those things that are blatantly missing that we never received as far as the defense counsel goes. So we got to figure that out, and hopefully that will, reopen the case so I can get it back to court and hopefully either get my conviction overturned or have the judge throw it out or something. Something's got
to
give.
I'm still trying to figure out why two life sentences for something like this. I can't fathom anyone getting two life. I mean, serial killers, terrorists, you know, that maybe, but for an accusation like that to get to receive over two life sentences is unbelievable.
Yeah, that's another thing too. The prosecution had originally offered me a 10 to 25. If I pled guilty, and I was like, and I told my attorney, I was like, look, I'm not going to accept no plea deal, and that I will never accept one, so don't tell me another one.
So it went from 25.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility, and may be recorded and monitored.
So it went from 25 to two life sentences because you wouldn't take a plea. 25 years, and it went to two life sentences.
But it would have been a 10 to 25. So technically speaking, I would have seen the parole board the first time after 10 years.
And here you get 2.5 because you would.
Yeah, you would have been out already, Shane.
Yeah.
What that? If you really want to think about it, I probably should be getting out soon. I accepted that.
Yeah.
But I'm not even looking at that. So.
Sally, I'd like to go back to you for a quick minute. We haven't talked to you yet. Are you still with us?
Yes.
I would like, another thing I can't understand is even though Shane was accused of something he didn't do, even though he's in prison, why would they take it on you to prevent you all those years from seeing your granddaughter? Unless there was purpose for getting you out of the picture too. It doesn't make sense. What makes sense by them not allowing you to see your granddaughter in all those years was that they wanted you out of the picture too, which would justify why they did what they did with Shane, because they wanted both of you out of the picture. But it doesn't justify it.
They didn't want our family there at all.
Right. It makes more sense that they had a plot to even put you out of the picture.
Yeah, they just didn't want any of us there because with us there, anybody, we could have talked to Kayla, and Kayla might have come back around at that point. They didn't want us to do that.
See. You know, there's so many people sitting in prison for things they did not, crimes they did not commit, just out of selfishness of other people. You know, false allegations and corruption.
You know, I personally believe that the rate of illegal convictions is far higher than that's reported in the legal press or anywhere else. From what I've seen, I would say the rate of illegal conviction is double or triple that is actually reported.
I actually believe it.
You know, the fact that DNA, it used to be much more difficult to get a conviction overturned. Once a jury spoke, the law says that, you know, unless you have very clear evidence of some legal or factual mistake, that conviction is going to stand. And once somebody's incarcerated, it's very difficult for them to defend themselves legally or to, organize the type of investigation to go back and search for and find evidence of an improper conviction. So what happens is once you get this type of circumstance happening, it used to be almost impossible to overturn. Then DNA evidence came out, and people started to say, somebody says there was a crime. There's DNA evidence at the crime that was left at the time of the crime. That DNA evidence does not match, the person who was convicted. You would think that a lot of people in government would say, okay, that makes sense. But initially, a lot of prosecutors and a lot of police resisted it. In the case of a rape, you know, a woman is raped. There's DNA evidence on her person that's collected at the time of the investigation within 24 hours of the rape. The DNA is tested. It comes back that it's not the person who was convicted. What do you do? A lot of prosecutors said, well, that means that there must have been somebody else present during the time of the rape. There wasn't one rapist, there were two rapists. And the second rapist got away. And they refused to accept the fact that, you know, they could have been wrong in a conviction. And the fact that DNA evidence has stuck and is so scientifically certain that you're starting to see the public say, I get it now. You know, there's a lot of people who are convicted of crimes who are not guilty. And when you see the amount of people on death row who have been exonerated, you know, because of DNA evidence, you have to carry that over to non-DNA circumstances as well and say, because DNA evidence has proven that people are illegally convicted, you have to say that people are still in prison who don't have the benefit of DNA evidence for whatever reason, who are also illegally convicted. And you have to, you know, take a look at things reasonably and say, you know, looking at all of the evidence, looking at all of the circumstances, was this person actually guilty? And in my mind, you know, you look at a case like Shane's, and there are so many questions. There's such a lack of evidence. There's so much contradictory evidence that you say, you know what, this is one of those cases.
Yeah. I think accountability is important, too. There's so many, as you mentioned, even on death row, those who have been put to death because people wanted the death penalty so bad they voted for it. Who's accountable to that? They're now, those people who wanted the death penalty are now criminals themselves. They killed innocent people, executed innocent people. Putting people in life in for life sentences, and what happens later after 30 or 40 years, they find out they were innocent. Who's held accountable for all these things? And someone once said when they can file lawsuits, they can receive the money, but the Department of Corrections, they don't care because the taxpayers are paying for it, not them. So there's no accountability to all of these things.
You know, a prosecutor, a district attorney, any government attorney who's prosecuting criminal activity to put people in jail, they're attorneys. They are subject to the professional rules of conduct that specify that they cannot withhold evidence. And yet it happens, sometimes called it a flood of prosecutorial misconduct with, for example, withholding of exculpatory evidence. And it's a known phenomena, you know.
Yeah.
The police or the prosecutor decide, you know what, I want to win this one. And they have some type of evidence that you know, strongly suggests or proves that the person that is being prosecuted is not guilty. And they just say, well, we're not going to turn this over to the defense.
Jeez.
I got to say this too, though, because I mean, you know, that's everything leading up to a wrongful conviction. But you know, as we've been talking, we keep, you know, demonstrating over and over.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
There are plenty of innocent people incarcerated. So, and what do we do about them? And that's where, you know, like, you know, I don't want to sound like a Malcolm on this, but that's where, you know, organizations like Bob and Lou come in. And I'm really hoping that people listening to this will start, you know, reaching out to, like, you know, Bob and Lou and start supporting their efforts and not just, you know, with, you know, physically or, you know, maybe, you know, maybe if there's a couple lawyers involved or listening, that they can help them with the legal aspect, or people could show up and, you know, protest wherever they need to, or if they can't do any of those things, maybe they could just, you know, donate money to Bob's organization to, you know, pay for, you know, the legal representation of people like me or somebody like that. Because I got to tell you, you know, I hear a lot of guys in here that say they're innocent, and there's a long-standing joke that says that everybody in prison says they're innocent. That's not true. There's people in here who say, you know, well, I did it, and I'm here to accept it. But then you got a portion who say, you know, I didn't do any of this, or, you know, what I did do didn't, I shouldn't have got all the time for, or, you know, I was overcharged, or, you know, any of those things. And those people need help. I mean, if it wasn't for, you know, like Bob and Lou and you know, organizations like the Franz, you know,
Actually, before the end of the show, I would like to have Bob and Lou give their contact information, their websites or whatever. Also, Sandy Freeze, once again, Sandy, you can talk about your chaos to victory as well. And she also has Factual Innocence on Facebook. So I'd like to have all of you put those down, you know, before the show does end. And we still have a half an hour, so we have time. But what I wanted to say was the wrongfully convicted in the prisons, again, it's one thing when the prosecution hides evidence. It's another thing when the people in the community don't even take into consideration the possibility that someone may be innocent, or that there may be something else behind the scenes. We have to let the audience know that they have to stop, if they have to stop being judgmental. And they have to try to have an open mind to situations like this, so that they realize there are deceptive people in the communities who can cause someone to be in prison because of their own lies and deception. I just want the audience to know that, because this has happened so many times, not just with wrongfully convicted, but with other people who are serving life sentences behind those walls.
You know, Leona, another just to feed into what you've said, because I wholeheartedly support your last statement. Cell phones have the capacity to record video, and you see, you know, cell phone footage of, you know, all these people being abused by the police in one way or another, and, you know, it provides you dramatic evidence of governmental misconduct that is irrefutable, and that serves to educate the public that, hey, this stuff happens all the time. You know, with George Floyd out in, I forget what state it was, but, you know, there was cell phone footage of a police officer with his knees on the back of George Floyd's neck for 7 minutes. And you see that video, and then you compare it to the official reports that were written up by all the people involved. And you see the differences, and you say, you know what? I see how this stuff happens, because so often the official reports of what happened are completely different than what you see in the video footage that comes from cell phones. So this is all very important in educating the public as to, you know, the amount of credibility that they should afford stuff if they serve on a jury. You know, go in there and make the government prove beyond a reasonable doubt that something happened, because the original founders of the United States said it's better to let 10 guilty men go than convict one innocent person. And that's what the standard of the law is supposed to be. And it seems like in recent years we've turned that on its head to mass incarcerate people, you know, such that the United States is, you know, leading the world. It's got more people imprisoned than most of the rest of the Western nations combined.
Exactly.
And you have to wonder, what's going on?
We have a lot of corruption in the system nowadays too. You know, whether it be with the prosecutor and sometimes even judges, And that's a sad situation because judges are supposed to be non-biased. They're supposed to be neutral. They're supposed to hear all the facts and not find anyone guilty unless they have all the facts. We have a media outlets out there that are putting out all kinds of things before they get all the facts as well, which all refers right back to those mass incarcerated, those in those prisons that are making up the mass incarceration in this country. It's sad, but it's true. It's sad. But, yes, Bob, you want to give your information, and Lou, you want to give your information as well to the audience so that they can have a way to contact in either of you?
Yes, I'll go first. The name of my organization is the National Center for Reason and Justice, and our website is ncrj.org. I also have a blog in my own name, and the address of that is onewordbobchattel.net. And I'll spell Chattel since most people don't have no clue how to spell it. It's C-H-A-T-E-L-L-E and then .net, bobchattel.net. I might also point out that Shane has his own website that I put together for him, and the address of that is ShaneCrum, one word, .org. And you can donate to Shane at that site. At the top menu, there's a button that says donate. And you may think a small donation does not help, but I can point out one very valuable thing your small donation can help with, and that's with Shane's telephone bill. Because was pointed out earlier, these phone calls are very expensive. And so consider going to the website shanecrum.org and at least making a donation towards Shane's phone calls. So thank you.
Thank you, Bob. And Lou?
And you know what? I'll give my email address, and I remind everyone I am no longer an attorney. My license was suspended for helping people like Shane and others who were getting stepped on by government in one way or another, as seems to be happening all too frequently to attorneys who engage in political activities that the powers that be don't appreciate for whatever reason. But my email address is lpiccone, L-P-I-C-C-O-N-E, at AOL.com.
Thank you so much, Lou. And you're right. There's a politician right now that's in a prison in Massachusetts because he was representing and he was helping a family whose daughter was put in a mental hospital for years, and it was on the news years too. So the girl went in when she was in her early teens, and she's an adult now. They finally did release her after many years to the family, but the lawyer, the politician, is serving some time for. Well, there's so much involved in cases like these, but it seems like the good lawyers are the ones that they seem to get rid of because they don't want the good lawyers. And sometimes I believe I'm hoping that's not true, but that's the situation I've run into.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility.
Sandy,
it may be recorded and monitored.
Please give your information
yes.
as well because you've been pretty much involved in wrongful convictions as well.
Yes, the name of my Facebook group is Factually Innocent. The name of my business is Victory from Chaos. It's also it's online, and it is also on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn, and my email address is all lowercase, S-A-N-D-Y, F as in Frank, R-E-E, F as in Sam, E-63.
And Sandy is also in the process of writing a book, and there's so much going on. But one of the things is I want to thank all of you for being on, too. And again, we still have a half an hour, or close to a half an hour. But I want to thank all of you for being on because this is very important. not only in Shane's case, but in other cases, as you were saying, Lou, there's a lot, a higher rate of wrongfully convicted men and women in prison than actually is reported. But in Shane's case, it's sad because there's also a lot of people that go to prison for things they didn't do because of custody issues that are involved with between divorced people and their children. And that, to me, is very sad, because if a parent thinks that little of their child, to put their child through something like that simply so that they can have full custody, or simply that things can go their way, they're the ones that should be behind those prison walls.
Leona, it's so misguided, because it's cutting off your nose to spite your face. You know, if you hurt your child to hurt your former spouse, you're going to be giving yourself problems for decades afterwards, trying to deal with that child's, you know, dealing with what you did to them. You know, and I think Kayla may be a good example of that. You know, if she truly believes that this happened to her, you know, and she's having difficulty with it now, you know, that's kind of on the mother and the boyfriend.
Actually, she's an adult now. She's probably on Facebook, and she may someday hear this. She may someday hear this whole thing, and she may start thinking again.
Hey, Leo, I want to say this, too, because at one point I was doing some research on my case, and I happened across the fact that my case was used as precedent to overturn a few bills that were using my case for. So if I eventually prove my innocence, then those appeals are now in question. So it isn't just about me, Kayla, and all that. This actually affects other people with other cases similar or having to do with precedent. I can't speak to that too much because I'm not a trained, never have been, but maybe Lou can touch base on how that works. So.
Shane, I can only imagine the good you're going to do if given the opportunity, and my hope and my prayer is that you are given the opportunity, and it looks like, sounds like, you have some highly motivated, intelligent people working on your behalf, and I'm so pleased for that, and I just imagine what you're going to do when you get out.
Oh, yeah, I got a plan.
Good.
So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that is kind of my mom. She gave me a good work ethic when I was a kid, you know, and I still adhere to that. I try to stay focused, but you know, I mean, I even try to, you know, if I'm not trying to figure a way to get out, I'm trying to figure out what I need to do for when I get out.
Have you ever, Jane, have you ever heard of this, what is it, the Father's Action Movement? It's called the Father's Rights Movement.
You're cutting out, Leona.
They have what's called a Father's Rights Movement Act. And it might be something that all of you want to check into, because it's been around for years. It's called the Father's Rights Movement.
Information from my mom, and she forwarded it to me.
Yeah, I will do that, because this has been around for years. They have lawyers, or they used to have lawyers that advocated for fathers in situations. I mean, I was doing social work back in 1984 to 1994. It was back in the 80s that it started, and it's still around strongly, because I just went on to check it out. But something you might want to write to, and I'll send it to your mother. I'll send it to you, Sally.
Okay.
It's called the Father's Rights Movement, and it's FACTS. That's what it says, rate of incarcerated, the rate of incarcerated individuals from single family homes, mothers and mothers' partners, mental and emotional well-being. This is all on this Father's Rights Movement. They have statistics and everything else.
I would like, also like to, you know, encourage people that feel the need to, you know, say hey, whatever, to go ahead and contact me, because, you know, it's good to hear from people that, you know, are having similar issues, or, you know, just, you know, want to share the fact that, you know, that, you know, they would like to help or whatever.
Bob did put out your information, Shane.
Excuse me, Leona, were you asking a question because you were breaking up?
No, I was. Can you hear me now?
You're still breaking up.
Okay. Shane was talking about getting in contact with him, and I explained that you had already had information out.
Oh, contact. Yes, I have contact information for Shane at the ShaneCrum.org website.
Yeah. Okay.
But Bob, I just want to acknowledge all that you've done as well. You know, I've been following your emails that you send out. Probably, it feels like more than 10 years now. I read them zealously.
It's probably those emails probably go back a quarter of a century now.
But, you know, I really think that you've had a positive effect. You know, my involvement in this area is at least partially due to reading your emails. My involvement in Shane's case is completely due to reading your emails.
Oh, thank you.
I think you both have been an asset to Shane, and I'm sure the audience listening, there's probably many out there that are going through the same thing that hopefully will benefit from what you two have been doing as well.
You know, and to anyone listening who knows somebody who is incarcerated, possibly falsely, who's actually innocent, you know, you have to get out there and advocate for that person, or get that person to advocate for themselves, because unless you do so, it makes it really difficult to get anything done. And Shane, I think you're doing the right thing here. And, you know, it's just so important to find your voice and to, you know, start doing something.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing a documentary at this point.
Start writing to 60 minutes, 48 hours. Start writing to some of these stations, because I see that they interview people in situations like this and other situations all the time. And Sandy, I want to give you credit too, because and I'm sure you're going to be helping a lot of people out there that are not aware of situations like this. And your experience to know that you are still an advocate for the wrongfully convicted, that you have an open mind to all the situations,
Yes. That's
a blessing.
Thank you.
People that have gone through what you've gone through would automatically shut themselves off to anything like this. And you've been fighting for them, the wrongfully convicted. You've been fighting for neutralism. You've been fighting for justice and not the injustice itself.
If any member of the audience wants to get further involved, another thing I can recommend is go to a lot of the crowdfunding sites, and you'll see crowdfunding campaigns seeking just a dollar or two or $5 to help somebody who has been wrongfully convicted. And if you go to those sites, you can, you know, basically choose who you want to help. And a lot of times, you know, if you want to just contribute money, it's not a lot of money to contribute. But if a lot of people do it, it makes a material difference to the person who's been illegally convicted. And a lot of times those websites will lead you to additional resources regarding that individual. So if you want to help somebody in addition to or as a substitute to you know, giving them some money on a crowdfunding site, you can get involved.
I have, there's so many advocates out there that don't even do anything that's free. You know, making calls daily to the media, making calls daily to the governor's offices. This is around the country. You know, January was supposed to be the month where everyone was supposed to be making at least 3 calls a day, every day, to the media about every issue out there that they consider injustice. And it all only takes them to pick up a phone and do a little research for telephone numbers. They don't do it. I would also suggest that people that want to help that already are doing something is to contact these universities where they have law schools. There's a lot of law students out there looking to work with lawyers and looking to work with others to try to bring justice, to try to get their internships, to try to get reference letters, to try to get the experience. There's a lot of organizations. I have one New Vision organization myself that I recruit through the universities and through Volunteer Match and through the United Way. And you will get law students that will be willing to help with your cases, your organizations. So that might be another avenue. I just want the advocates on Facebook, especially with all these groups that want so much to help incarcerated or their loved ones, to do something except liking what someone else is putting out there. If every advocate did just a little bit every single day to say I did something, then some people would not be suffering like they are in prison. But there are too many people, I think, sometimes advocates that are looking for the attention for themselves and not their loved ones. And this is sad.
Yes, and I want to mention something. I believe Lou is the one that brought it up about, you know, even how even a dollar or two helps. You know, the book that I'm in the process of writing is exposing what is going on within the prisons and institutions of our great country. And something that keeps coming to me is the food these prisoners are eating and how unhealthy this food is. So $1 or $2 is going to give Shane the opportunity to go to the canteen. I don't know if the institution that you're residing in, Shane, if the food is nutritious and healthy. Most are not, from everyone I've been interviewing. But, you know, giving him the opportunity, $1 or $2, to go to the canteen and buy something that's not going to make him sick would be a blessing.
You know, Cindy, I've heard a lot of complaints in that regard, too. I've heard a lot of people complain about, you know, bologna sandwiches where the bologna is green and the bread is moldy.
Absolutely. And there was an institution there in Michigan, and they were carrying the food in, and one of the women actually told me that there were maggots in the potatoes. So, you know, anything anybody can do to help Shane.
As far as, look, I tell a lot of people this all the time about, you know, about a lot of things that they do, but I'm speaking directly to the people that, you know, advocates out there. You know, I always say that, you know what's going to happen if you don't try. It's nothing. But if you do try, you never know what could come out of it.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's the reason why, you know, I don't just stop at sending letters to, you know, legal organizations or that. I even send them to churches, you know, reentry groups, you know, anybody, because I don't know what could come out of it. And surprisingly enough, here recently, you know, that kind of effort led to, you know, being in contact with Bob and Lou and, you know, if I'm not mistaken, it led to me getting in contact with you, Leona. Is that not correct?
You know, there's that, well, through friends in Germany. But there's actually, it's called the International Network of Prison Ministries. And it's prison ministries all over the world, but they all do different things. And there's a lot of them that advocate in every area of prison issues out there. It's called the INPM.
saying that, you know, do something, because you never know what's going to come out of it. Just try something.
Exactly. And talking about food, and I don't know if I mentioned this on this show before, but I've done it on others.
Ohio Correctional Facility, and may be recorded and monitored.
A lot of times they underfeed prisoners. They underfeed them, so these prisoners are starving for food, and there's a lot of indigent. They don't have the money to buy canteen. So what happens is they're so hungry that they end up getting fed leftover foods from other prisoners. And someone was saying one time that they even grind the food up and then they make patties or something with leftover foods or whatever, and they serve them to those prisoners who are barely eating. These are serious issues in the prisons that need to be addressed.
Well, you have a serious issue here. Aramark has a contract here, and they'll feed some of the worst food I've ever seen. And then they'll turn around and they sell food to the inmates, and they even have a thing called iCare where your family can order a cheeseburger and some french fries for like $11 or $12, and they'll serve that to us. But, you know, they can cook the good food when somebody's paying for it. But when you're not paying for it, when the state's giving it to us, it's some of the worst stuff I've ever seen.
Before we do go today, I want to let everybody know again that I started a petition with change.org to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. And when I say this, I don't mean long-term residential treatment facilities to let everybody out or to let everybody out soon. I say this because I believe that long-term residential facilities, like prisons, can be 25 years or 30 years or 40 years or 50, but at least they're getting the treatment from professional psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, occupational therapy, physical therapy, doctors, primary care physicians, whatever the case may be, rather than have these cold prisons that are steel bars, steel walls, cement floors. So replacing, if anyone gets a chance to go to change.org, replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. That would be good if you can also sign the petition. Again, it's replacing these prisons with professionals that are not contracted with the prisons, that are not just simply rehabilitate someone in 6 months to a year or 2 years and let them go. It's that however long they have to be there, at least they're getting the proper treatment. So I just want everyone to know that prisons are not working. Abuses in the prisons, deprivations in the prison, provocations in the prisons, medical, psychological, spiritual neglect in the prison, setting people up in the prison, keeping them in solitary confinement, keeping them on restrictive blocks, torment, torture, all of these things are not Department of Corrections. It's Department of Corruptions. It's Department of Abuses. And this is something that needs to change.
I want to say thanks to everybody that, you know, got on here today and, you know, shared their views and, you know, had something to say. I really appreciate you guys, you know, coming to my aid and speaking out for me, because I don't get a lot of that around here, I can tell you that. So,
hence mass incarceration.
So, thanks.
So if everyone wants to say some last-minute words, and Sally, I'm going to send you that link to the Fathers'
okay.
Rights Movement. I'll send that to you so you can send it to Shane. He can write to them. And please do,
okay.
Everyone, give your last-minute thoughts, feedback, whatever.
I just
want to say to you. Go ahead.
What was
Sorry.
That, Sandy?
I'm just wishing Shane the very best.
Yeah, Leona, I wanted to say to you, thank you for having me. You know, I think you're doing a great thing here for Shane. You know, just to have a forum where, you know, you can get a group of people together to discuss the issues. And I think when you get reasonable people together like this in a forum that the wider public can listen in on, you see that there's a consensus of opinion by people from different backgrounds, different ages, different backgrounds entirely, who agree that there's a problem here, and that's important to for the wider public to see.
Well, it's a blessing to have all of you on, because all of you have something to have had something to offer right along, and like you say, this is what we need to have happen. I'm going to let the rest of you speak, and then we will be closing. We got 5 minutes. Sandy, I'm going to call you to take over.
Yes, of course. Okay, so are there any further final things that you would like to say?
I thought somebody else was beginning to speak. No, I just wanted to thank all of you, and I think it's great that what you're doing, Leona, and giving Shane a chance to talk to the outside world, to play his case with the outside world, and I've been doing this for a long time. It's pretty frustrating most of the time, but there's no way. I'm 78 years old now. I'm probably just going to keep on doing this till I drop. So thank you all.
We're blessed by
Good
having
for you, Bob.
You doing what you're doing. Okay, Shane, do you have any final comments?
I want to thank everybody for being on there.
Oh, thank you, Sally. It's good to speak with you again.
I mean, I don't mind sitting back and just listening to these people because they have so much to say and, you know.
Very intelligent, and he's very fortunate to have them on his side.
Right.
And just stay strong, Sally. Stay strong. Don't give up hope and don't give up faith.
I don't give up anything.
Good.
I keep
Good.
Trying.
Well, it sounds like you certainly have, you certainly raised Shane in the right way, because he's a very optimistic person. And as you know, as we know, he's worked very hard to get out of there and continues. So, that's great. And that's persistence. Solidarity is, all of us working together and being persistent, I think is what we need.
I do too. I'm not good on the computer at all. I do the Poke and Hope system when I'm writing, and I'm not very good at my spelling. But you wouldn't believe how many times I'm on that computer, and I get so aggravated just for the computer, not just what I'm trying to get done.
You wouldn't believe how many people are out there that don't know how to spell and they on Facebook, but they're trying their best. But I have to admit, Sally, you're a beautiful person to be standing by your son all these years, even if you're not as perfect as you want to be on the internet or on the computer.
Well, even when the kids was little, when they'd ask me, how do you spell this, I'd hand them a dictionary and say, look it up.
Shane wants to say something
I didn't
about
know how to
his
spell
mother.
It.
Shane wants to say something about his mother. Go ahead, Shane.
My mom's been a total blessing to me all my life. When I came to Britain, I felt that my situation has put a damper on her life, and I hate feeling that way because no matter what I say, what I do, my mom's still gonna be my mom, and she's gonna try to take care of me.
Shane, I want to say one thing to you. You're not alone in your feelings. You're feeling like you're guilty because you're putting your mom through this. It's not so. No, whatever happened, happened because God has a purpose and a reason for all of this. And I've heard the same thing from my own loved one. And again, don't feel guilty. You know, we children were not asked to be brought into this world. And if something goes wrong, we shouldn't just desert them like a lot of people do with their children. So.
And I thank everybody else again. I can't thank you guys enough for helping me and doing things you're doing for me. It's amazing is what it is. I'm hoping that, I can draw attention to what it is you guys are doing so that way people can start signing on how to continue the work that you do. So
have them sign on. I want to thank you again, Lou, Bob, Sally, Cindy. Thank you so much, all of you. And again, We won't be having the show next Tuesday, but it will be the Tuesday after, which I believe is February 2nd. Let me just make sure I'm correct on that. Yeah, Tuesday, February 2nd, Shane will be back with us.
At 12:30?
I wanted to do, I wanted to do was maybe could you interview with like Bob or do one with Lou and let them discuss the work that they do or Bob's or Lou's book. Do one of those, a couple of those interviews first.
Okay.
And I'll come back on. Is that all right?
Okay, that'll be good. So we can do Bob and Lou. I'll schedule that and I'll send them an invite so that they can come on. And Sally, if you want to be on that. Pardon?
Yeah, just let me know when I need to come back on another interview at a later date.
Okay, good enough.
My mom.
Okay, great. Actually.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Shane, you take care. And I'm going to be signing off, everyone. It was a blessing to hear from everybody. And audience, I hope you get something from this. I hope you learn something from this. And keep an open mind. There are people that are wrongfully convicted behind those prison walls. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leona.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you
for using GTL.